Let's talk about sex, baby. But before we get into it, tell me, spit or swallow? Hi, welcome back to another amazing episode of Spit or Swallow with your favorite host, Hausa Chocolate. Yay! Today is an amazing day as per usual, and with me I have a very, very, very special guest. I've been chasing her for so long, but thank God the queen, it works with your title, Olori. You know, I've been chasing the queen, and the queen has decided to grace us with her presence on the pod today. Welcome, Yesede Olori Quitas.
Thank you, Adiva. Thank you, House of Chocolates. It's great to be here.
Thank you so much for coming on. I was chasing you.
I really was. You know, we actually scheduled a couple of times,
To be honest, the throat thing as well. I actually had 2 weeks off in December where my throat was going to.
It was actually really terrible. And then, like, with my day job, the times that this filming is happening is right in the middle of work. Yeah. And, some of us, we have day job, we have side gigs, and
if not for the economy, we won't have to be doing 1 million things.
Have you met anybody under like 40, anybody under 50 that is doing just one thing?
No. As people that are sitting in their offices collecting fat paychecks,
some of them, even with their fat paychecks, are still doing one or two PPs on the side.
I mean, it's necessary.
If something just comes up, sharp. It's a Nigerian way.
I mean, exhausting, but, and these are the issues that contribute to people not having enough sex, but let's not.
They're too tired.
They're too busy.
Sex is at the bottom of their to-do list.
It is at the bottom of their to-do list. So I'm going to allow you to introduce yourself and all the things that you do, speaking about you being multifaceted. I know you're pulling up your profile.
I'm about to, because she's like, introduce yourself. My name is Yesede. Mm-hmm. Yesede Olaika Agbola. I am a public health expert, a sex educator, sexual health and reproductive health educator, women's right, period educator, all that good stuff. I'm also a jewelry designer. I have a t-shirt today.
Yeah, I can see you're repping
my baby, my jewelry brand. We make waist beads and all kinds of other jewelry, anklets and all that. That's kind of what I do. What else do you want to know?
I mean, that's a good enough intro. I'll start piecing them apart one by one. So how did you get into sex education?
So if we go back in the day, I was the friend that you had in secondary school that knew everything about sex. Mm. And it really started from me reading this book called Every Woman when I was like 9. It was my mom's book. So I picked it up from like a bookcase. I used to read all kinds of books. Yo, I was reading that Jackie Collins and Sydney Sheldon and Daniel Steele at like 9. Mm. So this book is called Every Woman, and it's a gynecological guide to life. So it had like very factual, it was written by a gynecologist in the UK. And it had like very factual information about everything from periods to sex to menopause to childbirth, like literally like diagrams that were not PG, like showing you the full bush and everything, which was really great because you actually got to see, because I'd never seen it before, except mine. But, you're not taking a mirror at 9 years old to see yours. Mm-hmm. So it really gave me, a lot of information. I read about tampons. I remember my mom telling me as a kid that tampon was for adults. Married women.
Oh, married women.
No, not adults. Specifically, married women.
And some people still believe that.
Yes. So I realized, with hindsight, I realized that it was more of, married women have had sex, and so married women can then insert a tampon.
Yeah.
But every woman told me that anybody can put a tampon in, and a tampon would not disvirgin you. Mm-hmm. So when my friends in secondary school were making fun of someone that wanted to use a tampon, like, oh my God, she's going to disvirgin you, I was like, no, it won't. Because this is what the doctor said.
Yeah.
So I had a lot of that information, and I think that was the beginning of the curiosity.
Yeah.
By the time I got to university, I went to the University of Florida, and we had this I love organizations on campus. And one of the ones I was very involved in is called Gatorwell. Mm-hmm. And we used to distribute condoms on campus. We used to talk to students about like sexual wellness, go to clubs, like we'll hang out outside bars and like be giving out condoms. Like, look, we're going to hook up.
Yeah.
You know, do it with a condom. Safety. Encourage students to go into the health centers to go for testing for STIs and things like that. So that kind of sparked it. Mm-hmm. And then I started working at the health department in the minority HIV and STI program in Florida as well. And a big part of, I worked with like a really amazing boss, a mentor who really, instead of just like, you know, the disease control model, which is like stop abstinence and use condoms and, you know, we're trying to prevent STI. So obviously we are coming from a disease control model, but she made it really fun.
Yeah.
She would go to campuses, talk to students, talk to people in the community with like really fun ways to like, you know, keep
educate
your
them.
Educate them and also keep yourself healthy. Mm. And things like one time she brought a female sex worker in who taught the student, who taught people how to put on a condom without their hands.
Ooh.
Yes, girl. It's a skill I was taught. And I teach it like when I do, so when I do like bridal shower events and women's groups and
watch
stuff.
Me stealing that, okay.
So when I do bridal shower events and women's group and stuff, it's one of the things I like to teach.
That's your party trick.
It's a party trick. It's a it's a really fantastic party trick. I'm online because you put it in your mouth and you kind of put it in your mouth the right way. If you put the condom in your mouth the right way, you can actually put it on. So obviously, like for young people who would not want to use condoms, now you find that out, you're gonna want to. Because you're like, you know what? Let me show you this thing that I just learned, you know. Mm-hmm. So things like that. So from there on, when I moved back to Nigeria years later, I just always wanted to find a way to kind of, you know, educate more. But it was tough. It is tough. So I thought of starting a page. So I was working in public health. I still work in public health in my day job. I work for a government agency that controls HIV. Mm. But I wanted to find a way. I needed an outlet, essentially. I was seeing that like a lot of my friends, a lot of young people had questions about sex and had nowhere to ask the questions. So I now thought, Instagram was just starting off. This was like 2012. And I thought, let me start this page. It'll be an anonymous page. Like, go ask Alice. Mm-hmm. So, University of Columbia. Columbia University has a, I don't know if they still have it, but back in the day, they had this page online. It was like a website. You would send an email to Ask Alice, and you would ask anything about sex, relationships, and naiads, and then there'll be a response. So, like an agony aunt. So, I thought, okay, let me do a Nigerian version. It would be called, so, and I was big into, like, Yoruba mythology then. So, I thought, Orisha, you know, you go to the Orisha to ask, like, to the deity, to oracle, to be like, oh, tell me about this. Yes. So obviously, you know, you get the correlation. And then coitus, Latin word for sex. So it was called Orisha Coitus.
Ooh, okay.
And so the page started. I told my friends and a few people followed, but people were afraid to follow.
Mm.
Just to follow, not to ask questions, but to follow the page. Why? Back in the day, Instagram used to be a snitch. If I followed Hausa Chocolate, it would tell everyone that followed Olori Coitus that. That followed Olori Coitus that Olori Coitus is now following Hausa Chocolate.
Yeah.
If you make a post and I like it, when you go to you know, you used to have that heart portrait, that interaction
page. The interaction page was such a snitch.
Girl, if I liked your post, it would tell everybody. If I commented, so somebody comment.
Yeah.
So if you comment on my page, you just see someone come in there saying, what are you doing here? Then I was like, what are you doing here? How did you find out? So it made people really weary about like following. So the engagement was super low. So it was a bit discouraging. But I would still like, I would still get called to come and speak sometimes at school. Like if somebody found out that, oh, you know, you work as a sex educator. Because I did get my certification when I did my master's in public health. I also did a certification in sexual health. So people would say, oh, come speak to my, you know, my church group, come talk to my women's group and things like that.
Yeah.
But then the Instagram one was just, the internet thing was just very demoralizing because people say, I see your page, but I can't follow you. So I used to start and stop. But then in like 2017, something happened. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to take this seriously because I saw that there were a lot of people online now that were making a lot of noise, and people listen to whoever makes the most noise.
Exactly. And then they know way less wrong. Than you, wrong. And the information, off wrong,
oh my goodness, somebody was talking about how, like, kids, it was one guy that I used to follow then, and there was this whole thing about how, like, kids eating Indomie is the reason why they're starting their periods early. And so he was now, no, it wasn't just even that, he was literally bashing the moms. That was the one that's
giving their kids Indomie.
Look, honestly, moms don't give their kids Indomie.
No, MSG.
The MSG is too bad. Give them, you know, find other noodles. I'm a mom, and trust me, it's really tough. But I don't give my children instant noodles. And because of that, I have stopped eating instant noodles. I stopped. No bash, no shade to Indomie. It's quite yummy, but it's bad for you. Can we say that?
Yeah,
you can say that.
Yeah, okay. I mean, all right.
I'm just thinking, like, you know, we're going to be publishing. They should have come for us. So I'm like, but it's not just Indomie now. There are all these other brands. Ramen, right? Instant noodles.
About, you know, Indomie, I think about Ozzy's tweet about how one pack of Indomie is equals to 29 cans of Coke in terms of the sodium content.
The sodium content.
It actually put me off Indomie for like 6 months, but I went back.
Okay, so I went off, came back.
That's me. Sure. But I'm always on past, and off. I try not to do too
this much. Is the longest I've been off it, like 3 years.
Wow.
Yeah. When I was pregnant with my twins, there was something about the taste of like MSG. I was like super sensitive to it. Mm-hmm. And even like things made me
nauseous.
Like Maggie and stuff. Like it just, the taste was off to me and it would stay on my tongue for like a long time. So I just kind of stopped eating it.
Yeah.
And then I've been able to stay off it. Like I said, I don't want my kids to eat it. So I kind of have to lead by example. Mm-hmm. So, but this guy was going on and on and on about how, like, it started from girls starting their periods early too. Why wouldn't they start their periods early when their mothers are so lazy? Their mothers are just giving them instant noodles all the time to eat. And yes, that's why their periods start early, because the sodium inside is great. I said, uncle, stop. If you were saying that the hormones that are in, the artificial hormones that are in the diets of today is what is causing kids to start their periods early, we can have a conversation, because research has shown that is true. But you can't bash parents. Like, it was just, so I went on my personal page then. I just went on and on, and I was just, and then I realized that, wait, hold on. I have a platform. Why am I not using this platform to actually disseminate proper information?
Yeah.
While, you know, and of course, this person had a lot of engagement then and all that. And I started taking Orisha Koitos seriously.
Yeah.
And then I was like, I didn't realize that, you know what, that whole Orisha thing, Orisha is very, you don't see the Orisha. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of mystery involved in it. Mm-hmm. Perhaps people will be more, would
resonate approach, more, approach a...
perhaps it would be more approachable mm-hmm. if it was someone that you could see. Mm-hmm. So it used to be an anonymous page. So mm-hmm. I now put my face to it to humanize it. Yeah. And obviously with that, you can't be an Orisha if you're humanized. So it changed to Olori. Olori being the Yoruba word for queen. So it then became Olori.
I wonder if some people would have been pushed back because of the Orisha name itself. Because Nigerians will now come and film in the mighty name of Jesus. I'm not going to talk to any
The white man did. The white man did a terrible, terrible thing to us. And we've allowed them just to take our culture. These are beautiful, wonder. Do you know the Orishas? There's Oshun. Oshun is like the god of, you know, not just motherhood, but even if you think about, like, what is the Orisha that is closest for, like, erotism, sexuality and eroticism, is Oshun, you know?
Yeah,
and then even closer, if you think about Yemoja. So
you find that it is Black Americans,
the Caribbeans, people, Brazilians,
those
the
are
Cubans.
The ones who actually tap into our own culture.
I said, if you see the way, like, they worship, like, the Orishas in Brazil, like the Santeria, it is deep, it is beautiful. I'm a Christian. I love Jesus. But man, our culture is so rich. Meanwhile, the same white people that said we should not worship our Orishas anymore, or we should not even mess with them at all, they will bring out movies on Thor. On Thor, is that not like the god of thunder, the god of war? Marvel. All those Marvel Avengers. What are they? They're all those, their deities and their gods that have been changed into like cool things. And all of us are taking our money and paying to watch. Well, our children
Shango,
are watching.
If they do Shango movie, Avenger, we're not going to go and watch
they're it. They're not going to come and watch it. Meanwhile, these are our own superheroes, because they were human beings. And they, I mean, I don't know. It's just really tough. But yeah, so that's how
the trajectory
came in. And then since then, it's been, I've taken it super seriously. Registered as a business. So proper sex education, even in schools, in communities, period education, women's rights, advocacy, all the things that kind of come with that.
Let's just get into sex education, especially in Nigeria. How have you been able to navigate, like, just the attitudes? What have you had to tweak? So obviously, you know, you had your American training and your American upbringing, and even my sex therapy school is an American school. So I know that dealing with Nigerians and Nigerian clients is a whole different ballgame, because here you're fighting the shame, you're fighting religion, you're fighting, you know, community and the culture, and even just sexism. Oh, my husband, this, my husband. So how have you been able to reach, you know, how have you been able to tap into people to have them actually listen to you? What has your experience been like in terms of pushback, for instance? For me, I find that when people say, oh, how do you deal with this? I find that when people realize talk about sex, they're always actually open and looking for you, because so many people are dealing with these issues. So there isn't really as much imagined pushback as you would see. But, you know, tell me what your experience is like.
I like when you say that, because, again, look at Nigeria's population. We didn't get here by chance. Mm-hmm. We got here by a lot of people having a lot of sex.
Yeah.
But in terms of pushback, yes, when people find out that, like, oh, you're a sex educator, you're a sex therapist, their first thing is, oh my God, are you serious? Sometimes they have this idea. I think now it's a little better. About 10 years ago, people had this idea that if you said you're a sex therapist, they'll say, oh, okay, so will you come and stay with me and watch us have sex and then give us pointers and things like that. Will you be with us in the bedroom? And it's like, no.
Although you do find there's some people
who... There are. But when you think about the ethics of it,
of course,
that is not what it's about. Yeah, it's to help you attain... I put it like this. When you go to your doctor, or when you go to a regular therapist, your regular therapist is not coming to your day-to-day life
to observe
you and then give you pointers. You come and you tell your therapist what is going on, mm-hmm. and then they can objectively and with the skill set they have say, oh,
this could be this.
Have you tried this? You know, try these tools, mm-hmm. give you homework. And that's essentially what, in terms of one-on-one sex ed and sex therapy. Now, when it comes to, like, pushback, the most pushback I've experienced has been in schools. Mm. It's pinning me, because I'm trying to get back into this school thing. These young people thing keeps pulling me. Mm-hmm. But the breakfast I have chopped from schools and, like, young people's has been the hardest. Mm. I remember once, and most of the time you'd be on your own. They'll come and reach out to you. Somebody from his school, a really popular big school in Lagos, reached out and wanted us to come and do sex ed workshops with their, they were, it was a secondary school. So they were looking at, like, GSS 2, 3, all the way to SS 2.
Mm-hmm.
And it was going to be obviously age appropriate. So
you
wouldn't put them all together. Each year group would be separate because they are dealing with separate things.
Yeah.
But the parents.
Of course, I was going to say, it's the parents.
So the educators understand. They get it. They're like, okay, but madam, you know, you cannot say this and that. Fine. But the parents. It was a whole thing. The whole PTA was an uproar. Parents pulled out their kids. So we had said it was going to be like club time. So parents pulled out their kids when they were informed that there will be a sex educator coming to teach their kids about sex. A lot of parents said, oh, don't worry, I'll do it by myself. Mm-hmm. I don't know the things you're going to talk to my kids about. And then even the ones that agreed, the school PTA then had us sign an agreement saying that you would not use certain words. Like, guess which word? Number one word.
Vagina.
Sex.
Sex.
The first word, sex. How do you come and teach
sex
about
education
sex?
Without talking about sex?
You can't use the word sex.
So you now say...
intercourse.
Copulation.
In fact, the first reaction is, you know what? There's no point.
Yeah.
But then when you think about it for the greater good, these kids need it, all that good stuff. Okay, fine. And then second thing was, we had to divide the boys and girls. I don't believe that. That's if anywhere where they teach sex education now, for the most part in Nigeria, they divide the boys and girls a lot of times.
That's crazy.
Right? Girls go to one room.
So
and
girls,
boys go
girls
to one
do
room.
Menstruation and boys do what?
Yes. And then guess what happens? Boys don't know anything about menstruation and periods. Mm-hmm. So when they have a sister, a coworker, a girlfriend, a wife who is having cramps or who's saying this, I mean, I saw a video, I remember a few years ago, that the guy did not realize that the blood, where the blood came out of. Mm-hmm. They don't know. They don't realize. They're like, oh, you have more than one hole? Yes, we do. That pee comes out of another. Even there are a lot of women that don't know that.
No, for sure.
Pee comes out of a separate hole.
No, that one that is, that blood one is, comes a lot of people actually think that pee comes out of the vagina.
So isn't it crazy then? So first of all, they said we'll separate them, all that. Which I agreed, agreed, agreed. And then this friend of mine that had brought me on the project, because it was actually a friend of mine that was reached out to, and then she brought me on. She used to work in Nigeria, and now she's moved out, I'm sure. It's just part of the frustrations.
Country, this country.
But please, you know, we have to stay. Who's going to help the country? But anyway, that's another topic. So we then go, somebody, a group of us took the girls, uh-huh, and a group of us took the boys. We started with Jesus one. And then, you know, we started talking, you know, what do you know? Because the easiest thing is,
how first do you even ask, say, what do you know about? What do you know about?
No, you say, what do you know that happened? How do babies? You always ask the question, you know, where do babies, come from? What do you know about where babies come from? Mm-hmm. Because the first thing you need to do is, first of all, understand like where their knowledge level is. Mm-hmm. And then you get to them at their own level. Mm-hmm. After asking all the questions and talking to them, going round and round the circles and all of that, you know, you talk to girls more about menstruation. I also like to talk to boys about menstruation. Like I said, talk to girls about what's even happening about boys' bodies. So you're understanding each other.
Yeah.
I always and pass a box around where you drop your anonymous questions. So write your questions and then drop it. By the time we examined the questions that these kids had, they were way above the levels. All the parents I was talking about, oh, I'm going to sex educate my kids. The kids were already learning. Kids were asking us about like positions and things they had seen in porn. Kids were asking that, oh, my friend was watching this cartoon sex hentai. And I didn't want to watch it. Oh, my uncle was making me see, watch. My uncle brought something and showed me for me to watch on this. Oh, some of the boys were talking about how like some older women in their lives, their nannies and aunties, are touching them inappropriately.
I knew assaults would come in.
You know, and their parents think that they are the most innocent. Sometimes your child, who you have control over, is. But they go to school and they're interacting with children whose parents have no parental controls on the phones. These children are getting phones at a super early age. Mm-hmm. Sometimes these kids are literally just watching like a very appropriate thing. And then there's a pop-up and then there's an ad and then they're seeing things. You know, in a day, I think they say any child, even a child that's 0 years, will be exposed to sex or sexual content about 10 times in a day. So if you're not having that conversation with your children, if you're waiting to have the big talk, you're going to have a problem. So the pushback, so it was very glaring. Of course, we took this information back to the PTA and parents like, oh no, oh my God, that's your problem. Obviously, we were not invited back, don't worry. We didn't even want to come back again because it was a really,
did
really...
Did you answer the kids' question?
Yes, we did. I mean, as much as...
To the best of
to the best that we can. Good, yeah. Also, remember that these are anonymous questions, so you can't ask follow-up questions that would require the person revealing themselves. So you just try to talk about it general, like, look, general your body, you know, when you talk about body autonomy and if somebody is touching you inappropriately, showing you things that are inappropriate, because I think a lot of times parents and adults focus on children being touched inappropriately, you know, good touch versus bad touch, or what is okay and what is not okay touch. We don't talk a lot. There's a lot of grooming that happens. Grooming is actually, we should be more afraid of grooming.
In this
grooming.
Country, that Nigeria, that's because filled with pedophiles.
Please. Because a lot of children now, if you ask, a lot of young children will say, no, you know, don't touch me there. You know, Pastor Nnamdi Odukoya, God bless her soul, wrote a beautiful book about, you know, don't touch me there and, you know, my body and all that. But we've not focused enough about the grooming that comes from literally sitting a child down and what help making them watch inappropriate content. That is like one of the easiest way, or tell the child to touch themselves, or telling them to touch. So we're thinking penetration, but there's a lot that goes on before you get to that point. So we really need to, and a lot of parents are like, oh no, not in my house. Oh, it's other people's children, it's not my children. So that pushback has been, but we're seeing more of it. Lately I've been getting school, like when I meet someone and I say, oh, this is what I do, I also, you know, provide like age appropriate sex education even in schools. I've had a few like heads of schools say, please come and talk to us in our schools. And I'm always like, before you invite me, let me tell you what the problems you're going to encounter.
Yeah.
So please go and fight your PTA and go and get your parents on board before you bring me in. So yes, yeah. But I definitely want to do more of that. And then, you know, universities and things like that.
Yeah,
I'm going to be pulling you into some projects that are happening this year. Just be ready.
That's something I've definitely been thinking about. But, you know, the thing about the sex space is because there's not a lot of us here, you also have to narrow your focus sometimes. If not, you'll be running around like a headless chicken. Just like you said, you can do HIV stuff. You can do sex education stuff. You can do intimacy stuff. You almost have to learn about everything because you have people coming at you from, and it's not, we don't have enough colleagues and resources to say, you know what, okay, this is more for someone who deals with older populations, talk to this person. So you have to go back and do the research and then come and cater to the people
But you know, we have quite a community of sexuality and sex educators.
For educators, not so much.
I see what you're saying about therapists. I tell people I'm not a sex therapist. I have a life coaching. I'm like a sex coach almost. And I've been moving away
from coaching
more and more. And not so much because it's a bad thing, but more because I feel like where my strength lies and where my passion is more in the education space.
Yeah.
You know, in terms of not just even like sex, intimacy, and also even period. So like a big push for me this year is a lot of period education, talking to women's health issues.
Mm-hmm.
And so when people come to me now for therapy, I refer them to people that I know that are licensed therapists, not licensed sex therapists, even not just somebody that is selling something online that now goes and does a call and starts calling themselves a therapist because people have been asking them for questions and now all of a sudden they're telling me they're a therapist, but it's just a way for them to sell sex toys or for them to sell you know, whatever products they're doing.
And that's why I always tell people, like, most of, even when I was searching for sex therapists, you find that a lot of people are either regular therapists that maybe do like a short course. That one is even kind of better
because they're just specialized.
But sex therapy training is actually, like, the one I'm doing is 2 years. Like, it's actually really deep and comprehensive. It's like doing a whole other degree. And then,
what are you doing it with?
It's called Institute of Sexuality Education and Enlightenment in Arizona. And then you have, like you said, all those ones that are just selling Kayamata. They say they're a sex therapist. They're selling this and that. But because the knowledge gap is so wide, they're answering people, and you see people sending them all their life comments. I do this, I do that. When I went on the DSTV program, the Bimi and Tools of Eshu, people came in my DMs like, "Hi, please, do you do blowjob class? Do you do da da da?" I mean, the other person does, and I said, "Please, this the other person that was with the other guest. Okay. She does those she's called Sex Talk with Soul Spice."
Oh, that's my babe, Hannah.
Yeah, so she does those kind of. I'm like, I'm not offering those at the moment. Services. I don't know if I'll ever, even if I do, it wouldn't be. So when I do like women's workshops and stuff, those kind of things in intimate settings, I wouldn't be like, "Well, yeah, everybody, be 20K for the blood," and then now my mouth.
I know what you mean because I have that.
Yeah, so
I tell people that even when I do like women's groups and workshops and bridal showers and things, it gets to a point where I'm like, turn off your cameras.
Yeah, because it's not.
This is not going on the internet.
Exactly.
You will not have me this day.
Chopping banana.
Like,
for everybody to see.
I'm so sorry.
Because there's a line, and that's the thing.
Do you think it's even so much as the line, or it will easily, before you know it, you are on what's about this?
Insta blog. Mine isn't even for the line in terms of what we do, because at the end of the day, sex is, it is messy, it is all of that stuff. It is more of how people now brand and position.
And that's what I'm saying. Before you know, you're on Insta blog, you're on Linda IKG and all, and then there are all these comments.
And then next thing
you've been turning into a meme.
No, I'm screaming.
I'm sorry, that it's one of my big, I just, like,
I'm actually,
it's
screaming.
Like,
no, valid
as
concern,
fearless as I am,
concern.
I'm also like an upstanding member of society.
I have your image, you know,
I'm very, very mindful of my image. Yeah. I'm also, so I told the line. Yes, I can teach you, like I told you about that party trick that, you know, that I have. I'll teach it to you, but not on camera.
Yeah.
And if you put my, if you, sometimes, of course, some people will, you know, post, like, maybe, especially bridal showers, you know, people are always super excited. Yeah. And they're like, oh my gosh, she's teaching this. And I, and then you're taping me without me knowing.
Yeah.
First of all, that's why I go with my assistant now. Before, I used to go alone. Now, with my assistant, we go to,
watch them,
please. Excuse me, ma, please. Mm-hmm. Can you stop this? Can you turn off? Mm-hmm. And if you post it, best believe I'm going to report it.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to take it down because we're not going to play that. It's very, and that's why it's even been tough for me to like to put out workshops. Because it's that like push and pull.
Yeah, you know, it really is because like, and that's the thing about being in the sex space. And the thing is, you can have the purest content and people still come. I just, one of the videos came out and I was seeing the comments and somebody was saying, and that's something I've seen men say a lot, because when I give my experience and I say, oh, my partners or my rotation or this or that, someone say, yes, you know, sex education is good. This is good for adults, but why are you letting people know that you have different partners? You shouldn't. And somebody said, if you communicated with your partner, you will not feel the need to come out and be communicating other people about sex. I was like, thanks for the information.
I get it. And things like that are why on Olori Coitus, I don't share personal experiences. You are not, maybe if, again, in close settings, I share my personal experiences, but you're very, very, very not likely going to see me on Olori Coitus talking about like, oh, I did this with my husband or this partner that I had this or something. And it's all because of this. Me, oh, those things get to me.
Oh, fair enough.
I don't have the bandwidth to
deal with Nigerians
with
and their madness.
Madness. I know that's Nigerians.
I'm always ready, come.
And, you know, and maybe I asked God to, like, release me from this bondage. but I'm still, like, I remember when I moved back and I told my parents that I used to have a big bowl of condoms. When I moved back, I had, like, a small mini apartment in my parents' house.
Yeah.
And I had a big bowl of condoms on my coffee table. When I was in college, I used to have a bowl of condoms. Because, again, I work with Gator Well.
Yeah.
And I would have a big bowl of condoms. All kinds of condoms. Mm-hmm. Even till now, if you want some, I have friends that still send me condoms. And my mom was like, you know,
this is sending a message that you're having sex.
Not even just that. Why don't you wait till you're married to be doing all these things? All these things that you're doing. Even if you find someone that wants to marry you, when the family hears that you're doing all these things, how would they feel? And I'm like, they will feel the way they feel, none. You know, and it is what it is. But I think while I'm like, I don't care, at the back of my mind, I'm still like,
yeah. You care. No, but it's understandable because at the end of the day, we are human beings, right? And this is also something that I've come to realize actually matters to a lot of people. Because somebody was even saying, oh, you know, that you can't not blame some men for feeling some type of way, because what if they marry me, then they have kids, then the children at school now pull up content that I'm doing and say
that is what I'm very afraid of, because I have saying, kids my, have
exactly
kids
and saying
school.
Oh yeah, your mother is doing spit or swallow, da, 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 da. And for me, I feel like I personally, I don't give a fuck, because these are conversations that need to be had, and my own approach to sex and sex conversations is they're just as normal as have talking about, you know, food, talking about digestion, talking about all of that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And if nobody does, everybody keeps having this, oh, but it's sex, let's cover it like this, let's do it like that, you know. But obviously there's also,
but do you also think that there is a, sorry to cut you off, but do you think that for some of these things there's a time and space for it? Because that's where, so the, where I stand, I mean, the line that I straddle is, I'm with you on, these are important conversations to have. The same way you are eating, the same way you are drinking, the same way we watch all these cooking videos is how we should be able to watch videos showing us or talking to us about sex.
Yeah.
But because sex is such a
wide or broad,
not even so much wide and broad, but it has to now do, you know, the reason society codifies it so much and tries to shroud it is because it requires human bodies, naked bodies, and there's a quote unquote sacredness.
Yeah.
Because it's like that, I feel like you should definitely learn about it, but I am more of the, let's learn about it in controlled settings. Because in this day and age where everything is content, everything is, can be taken and used for things that in far, far reaching areas.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to kind of be careful. Even friends that I know that do like workshops mm-hmm. with like it's always like in closed settings, you know, you have people when people come in, they're not posting necessarily on say Instagram or Facebook.
Yeah.
They have a course. Mm-hmm. You take the course. You can't, the course is not recorded.
Yeah.
So while they're teaching you these things, mm-hmm. they are kind of in control of the image of themselves, that is, because especially most of us are women. Mm-hmm. I feel like if we were men and doing these things, there'll yeah, be nobody less of a problem.
Okay. So that's the thing. I feel like that controlled set, of course, yes, in certain ways, you should have certain things in control settings because, like you said, even with sex education, it should be age appropriate. If I'm doing a titty sucking workshop, it should not be accessible to a 15-year-old exactly.
But if it's cut and pasted on Instagram or Facebook or Twitter.
Exactly. So I understand what you mean about control, but I find that a lot of it is also because of people, like you said, wanting to protect the image that is projected on us. Because at the end of the day, people say, this one is just doing sex, everybody now share one. But yes, you also exist in a society where, you know, your image is important and you also want people to take you seriously. But I think that sometimes we allow those loud voices, like it's about looking at the impact of what you're doing. Yes, certain things should definitely be in control spaces, but also realizing that with or without you doing what you're doing, the internet is still going and going and going. Kids are already accessing. So why shouldn't there be the right content mm-hmm. in that volume, in that speed? And that's why obviously there are community guidelines for Instagram. There are certain things that they don't allow. Instagram doesn't allow nudity and all of that stuff.
You can't show
nipples. They'll take it down.
You can't show nipples. Yes, you can't show even as a picture, not even as a picture, even as a diagram. That is like anatomy. In fact, there was a point where I started doing something where I put for educational. I'll put an asterisk on my on the video that says for educational purposes only. So that way, I'm just explaining it to so that people, and that's why I don't go into like technique. Mm-hmm. You will not see me really talking more about technique on social media.
Yeah.
We can do it in other spaces. Yeah, and I kind of told the I'm sure you've heard of the village auntie, Angelica Lindsay Ali.
No, I don't know.
Sorry. You don't know the village auntie. She's our auntie.
She is?
She's our auntie. Angelica Lindsay Ali. She's an African American sex educator. Mm-hmm. She has a lot of ties to like Africa. I think her husband is from Ghana or Senegal, is African. And she has, she is also like a Muslim. She's the first Muslim sex educator I had ever come across.
Yeah.
And she does a lot of workshops, works a lot with women, especially. But a lot of the work that she does is in closed settings.
Mm-hmm.
So if you go on her Instagram page, you see her, you know that she's a sex educator. She talks about in broad terms.
Mm-hmm.
But when you go, like I've taken her workshops, when you go to her workshop, she is everything, no holds barred, you're getting it all.
Yeah.
But it's in a closed setting.
Yeah.
And that was the first time I remember seeing one of her workshops. And I said, okay, you know what? This is actually more my style and more my speed. Mm-hmm. And everyone is different. And different people need certain things because
mm-hmm.
someone who is like super explicit and is like no holds barred. I mean, I don't know if you've seen like the Tiomi Morgans.
Yes. What's her name? Glamazon.
She would appeal to a certain audience.
Yeah.
But there's a section of society who, I remember even when I, you know, became public about, this is what I do. Like, I'm a sex educator. I had new people that would walk up and say, you're normal. You're like me. You're like us. Like, you're, quote unquote, what Nigerians would call like a proper babe.
Mm-hmm.
How are you able to talk about sex with a straight face? No giggling.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and I'm like, because it is a normal part of life, like you would.
Mm-hmm.
But my approach has helped open up
certain types of people.
For sure. You know, and then there are people who are even like super ultra religious and come from that angle. Someone like mm-hmm. Angelica Lindsay Ali, the village mm-hmm. auntie, she's mm-hmm. she appeals to like a very modest crowd who would then be able to follow her publicly and then come to her workshops and get like the more explicit information. But that opens the door
mm-hmm.
as opposed to like pushing certain people away because we're trying, what are we trying to do? Give the information and be as inclusive as possible.
No, definitely. I definitely agree. And I feel like there's definitely space for everyone and everybody's, you know, style. It's just extra navigating what your branding looks like, because like you said, even as you've kept your personal life out of it, you've kept, you don't, you're not descriptive, you're not somebody who, like, see what's her name, there's this other sex therapist, is it Olaomi or something,
she's, Olaomi, she's, yes, my babe.
So she as well, but she's more the kind that will do technique, she that did. Will do.
She's, all I, of those I tell her, my sense, if you want technique,
you know, she would do all of that. Me. So me, I'm someone who I can describe things in an explicit manner. In the, when I do like women's circles and stuff, of course, we can go all out. Like you said, in those areas, you ensure that one is a trusted circle, it's age appropriate as well. You know, you're not having kids and all of that. So, but me, no matter how deep in this sex field or sex therapy or whatever offerings I do, I'm never going to be thrusting my hips on Instagram, writing an imaginary dildo. I'm never, that's not going to be me. But there are so many women who do that. So I know this, I met this baby who does like, you know, a lot of people do all this sacral healing and stuff. So they do all this twerking, they do all this, oh, I do, dick riding classes, mm-hmm, da da da. Mm-hmm. It's not me. Like, or, me, I'm already someone who people already sexualize. So it's their dream to see me riding like, one imaginary dude on the internet.
Yes.
I'm not going to do that. But I find that I'm definitely somewhere, I'm definitely more through towards the explicit side,
mm-hmm,
but I'm not descriptive in terms of.
So, know, so there are people who that, like, your speed is exactly what they're they looking need, for.
Yeah.
And yet there are some people who, like, please, sis, show us everything.
Mm-hmm.
And they need that, mm-hmm, more.
Yeah.
So to each their own. And that's why we need
more
people. I always say that there are not enough people,
yes,
in the space. And, mm-hmm, we need men. Oh goodness, we need men.
Even
all the people we have mentioned.
Even in my classes.
All the people we've mentioned.
Even in my classes, in the sex therapy classes, there was a time where there are 30 of us. There were some live classes that had educators and therapists together. And there was only one man. And the man was coming to, because he was trying to understand himself and his own, you know, experiences with intimacy and all of that stuff. And it's actually true that you find that there are more women in these spaces and not men, because men are just like, you know,
I know
they just
know.
Don't, yeah.
And the funny thing is, you would get approached. I mean, I feel like my audience is
balanced in terms pretty, of the mix.
I mean, yes. Well, if you look at, like, say, social media stats, it's more women than men.
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of people who approach me, it's almost like a 65-35. No, that math is not math.
No, 65 is too heavy.
No. Like a 60-40 split of women 60 and men 40.
Yeah.
That 40% is still a big number,
mm-hmm,
of people asking questions, of people, yeah, wanting help. Because, again, these women are not having sex by themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So somebody needs to reach them. And sometimes, mm-hmm, when I have workshops, women say, well, you're talking to us. You actually need to be talking to our men.
Mm-hmm.
So who's talking to the men?
Those are
women are quick to gather in groups, workshops.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I promise you that sometimes I've had events where it's just a bunch of female friends that are like, you know what, Friday night, let's do something different as opposed to, yeah, going out. You know, I know this therapist, so what if she comes and talks to us? And then we have a women's gathering. There are no men there.
Mm-hmm.
But men don't do that. Men are not sitting down talking about, oh, this is what I'm experiencing.
How can I make my wife orgasm with each
more?
Other, they're talking about how they blew her back out and she couldn't stand up the next
and
week.
How I give it to her every day, sometimes 3 times a day. But really, they're also having problems with erectile dysfunction.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes even men have issues with desire.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, they might feel like, oh, they are more responsive as opposed to being spontaneous.
Yeah.
And they might feel a bit of shame about it that, yeah,
because,
you know,
we have
society
over,
says
we keep
that
over sexualizing and acting like men are the ones who want sex.
Yeah, the lion.
You know?
And, mm-hmm, yeah, and so, you know, and so men that don't have that and are on the opposite end of that spectrum feel some type of way about it, but they have no outlet to really, really,
mm-hmm,
talk about it. So we need men. This is a shout out. I mean, what do you call it? Like a call,
yes,
for
call
more
to action,
men.
Please.
Call to action.
We are begging men.
We need more men to come into the sexual health, sex education, sex therapy space. Because it also shifts the perspective. When a man, I'm a woman, I can only tell you what I know educationally. But,
yeah,
in terms of experience, I don't know what it's like to be a man in a relationship.
Yeah.
I don't know what it's like for, as a man, when I want to ejaculate, and I'm telling the man, yes, you're dealing with, you're dealing with like premature ejaculation. And I'm saying, oh, you know, you just do your Kegel and, you know, you just pause back,
you
clench and,
yeah,
you squeeze. And he's just like, sis, cool, jam. But I'm saying it
based on what I've learned, what I've learned, lived experience, and I find that that's why, you know, male gynecologists can be a little out of touch with reality sometimes, because those ones just bring, you can tell when someone just giving you his textbook. Oh, okay, I have PCOS. I take this pill. Take one.
Isn't that there are more male gynecologists than female?
That is also such an interesting.
It's because there are more male doctors.
Fair share.
And it's just sad.
There are more males in
and STEM. Also, obstetrics and gynecology is one field of medicine that is very, you can't predict. It's very unpredictable time-wise. Your hours are unpredictable. You can be sitting down in your house with your family and next thing, your patient's about to have a baby. Yeah. And you're rushing to the hospital, mm-hmm. and all that. So a lot of women shy from it because they also want to, you know, have time for their families, mm-hmm. and things like that. Yeah. So you would tend to have more men.
But it stresses me because I always say if I could go back, I would actually go back, be a doctor, specialize in women's health. Because you find that when you're in the sex space, even if you're interested in, we're focusing on intimacy, sex education, you find that something keeps pulling you back to women's health because so much of it stems women's from health. There.
So for me, right, I actually wanted to be an OBGYN.
Mm.
I wanted to be an OBGYN because of women's health. Like I said, I've had this pull basically my whole life.
Yeah.
But then when I was pre-med in undergrad, I was pre-med, and I picked like a random major just to fulfill all the prereqs to go to medical school. But around my third year was when I started to realize that my interest in health and women's health was not from a clinical aspect.
Yeah.
I always just thought I would be an OBG, but yes, it was more from a social aspect, from a public health aspect.
Yeah.
That was when I started to discover public health. And I realized that, what I actually want to do is more geared towards public health and not clinical medicine.
Yeah.
The reason why I say this is there are a lot of OBGYNs and doctors who later on discover that, public health is actually more their speed. Mm-hmm. And then they are pulling away from clinical medicine and going, moving into the public health, space. So really, I feel like don't wish you had been an OBGYN. Women's health will pull you. Go, like, focus into it. The way you're taking this course on sexual health and all that, you can, do more in terms of women's health and speak to women's, pain points. It's a fantastic, that's what I'm doing now. Because again, like I said, the period health and period poverty. Even speaking on periods,
it's so funny because our stories are similar in certain ways in terms of always reading. When I was young, I used to read a lot of stuff. I used to read a lot of medical books for fun. And even when I think about my own experience with sex education, I remember the first time I ever saw sex in a book, I was 7. And it was a dreams book. And they were talking about if a man and a woman, or a man and a girl, or a boy and a woman are having sex, something is bad. And I remember in the dream. And I remember,
was this a Nigerian book?
Of course. I'm sure it was like a pastor that read the book. And I remember asking my auntie, I was like, what is having sex? Because for me, I was thinking having, like consuming. I was trying to just use my child brain to understand what it meant, And she was like, it's not for children. And I just left it. And then obviously, I guess, with age, with reading other books and stuff. And I mean, even from when I was like 10, 11, I was already reading those fat, adult novels where they would, I think my own proper, like explicit, if you may, exposure to sexual activity was like Meals and Bones. Because, they say, his member, his member, this, his that, her breast. It was all descriptive and erotic and all of that. And then all of them, they just lied to us. They don't say, he felt one sharp pain. And then after, it was an explosion of pleasure.
They say, and she just got wrapped into it. She just felt a twinge.
Just a twinge. They're just like,
when you're about to have sex for the first time, and it's like fire
in your vagina.
You wonder, why am I not like the girls?
You understand? I've always been a La La Landy. Passion, even with my approach to sex, it was always special person, special time, fireworks, all of that stuff. And then when I think of like secondary school, I know we did like reproduction, so they did I remember the teacher saying, I think we revisited it in GS3, and she was like, we're talking about sex. She said, if you laugh, you're getting flogged. So everybody has to be like, because obviously, when they say sex and everything, people want to giggle and all of that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
If you're finished if you giggle. So even then, it was like, we had at least we did, you know, menstruation together. They did ejaculation and baby forming. And then I remember even the Always people. So that was also something that used to help. When Always would come and then they give you...
Oh, ah, that's nice. Yeah, so what school did you go to?
So they would... It was called Antilles International School. So they would go and they would... they would come and, you know, do like the description and say da-da-da-da-da. And I remember like everybody having like, you know, pads and stuff. And you know, everybody would now have the pad hold praying for like their periods to come and everything. And then they also had all these HIV outreach guys that would come as well. And those ones too used to do like so most of the time I feel like a lot of education came from like external people. So the same thing, club hours, they'll mm-hmm. come, they'll talk about HIV, but obviously that one was a lot of abstinence based. Then, you know, use condoms, control. But it was still better than nothing. Obviously nobody spoke about like changes in your body, about feelings and all. So what I noticed was that in Nigeria, what they would do is they take out, like you said, how parents would want to remove sex. Mm-hmm. They want to remove any inkling of
pleasure.
Are you wanting to do it?
Because they're just giving, enjoying it. And you know,
they're just telling you the science of it, you know.
You discover that this thing is sweet, that this thing is pleasurable, then you want to do it. Meanwhile, we're trying to keep you from doing it. So, how do they straddle that? That's why they tell you no. They remove anything.
They remove anything. And I mean, understandable, because people have that fear. I think that...
Yeah, but is it really? Because when we become adults...
No, understandable in terms of I can see the fear from parents, but not right.
And because when we become adults... Now, I'm dealing with a lot of women
who are afraid of pleasure.
Who don't even know how to even... You know, when I'm like, pleasure is your birthright. You know, pleasure is yours. Take it. All that. They're just looking at me like, oh, Lori, I beg. Pleasure in what exactly? Because everything they have sucked. Nigeria has also sucked out. Nigerian parenting has sucked out the pleasure in it. When you're a kid and you're eating and you lick your spoon, they say, stop it. Why are you licking your spoon like that? Because any little thing that... Did you notice? I don't know.
Maybe
it might be a generational.
Yeah, maybe not in my home. But to be honest, I don't always like to use my own upbringing, because what I find is my generally, own upbringing and the general upbringing, they are two totally different worlds entirely. But I think that in Nigeria itself, even in the world, something like the world is very erotophobic. We can romanticize suffering, but pleasure. Like, people always want to draw a line. And when I always ask people about the lines of pleasure, you find that it's where their moral compass can carry them.
Yep.
People feel guilty when they're doing it. I mean, look at us and black people, and even naps. Can you nap in the afternoon?
That was one. But I feel like the reason I can is because my mom used to nap.
Napping was illegal in my house.
Are you serious?
Nap?
No, I mean, Monday to Friday, you'd be at work and stuff. So that was not. But on weekends, my mom would tell you, would say, Sunday, she tell the gate man, we are not home. And you know, back in the day, people were not calling before they came to your house. So they would, we're not at home. And she would, after lunch on Sunday, everybody go and sleep. Saturdays, sleep. So, but I understand what you mean about naps. And even like when you think about, I have a lot of like married. Imagine they say, don't have sex until you're married. Don't have sex until you're married.
There's a lot of sudden, now, have sex.
You have this legal right to have sex. And they think that by you just having a wedding and signing the papers.
That's exactly what I say.
Now, all of a sudden.
You eat jollof rice, you dance, you sign papers. Yes, and all of a sudden. All your neurons just change.
All
like
the conditioning. And you know, another thing about women especially is that we have been socially conditioned to delay gratification.
Mm-hmm.
Think about like so many things that you would like to do. And they say, no. No, not yet. Don't worry. When you are...
There's time.
And you know, like, as a woman, because you're the one, you don't want to get pregnant. You don't want to get an STD. If you start having sex, you know, you're the one who's going to suffer most of the social consequences and even the health consequences.
Yeah.
So by the time you get to a place where you are now legal, even if you were having sex before you were married, it was like the illicitness of the hiding or the, you know,
the thrill of this secret thing
you're not supposed to do. Now you have it to do.
And they've turned it to your duty.
You know. So now all of a sudden, it's gone from this thing that you've been looking forward to do it. And now you're doing it because...
to keep your home. Because it's the duty of a good woman.
Because you don't want him to be looking outside, you know. Because if you're not having sex... because, you know, they won't talk to you about sex. But one time, they're going to talk to you about sex. For your marriage.
Anytime your husband asks for it, you should be ready. You should be ready. And that's why marital rape is also a thing.
It's so big. People, do you know there are a lot of people that tell you that will still argue with you? I did a post about that a while ago. That people argue that a man cannot rape his wife. And I'm like, excuse me?
Is that ownership and property mentality that they have? And it's just like, are you actually insane? And that's why I say Nigerians always, when we go back to basics and we argue about consent and we talk about consent, people will consistently reject your definition of consent, because if they accept it, they will accept that they've been violating people. They have to accept and deal with the fact that they have been rapists, they have been abusers, you know, all of that stuff. And even women too, because they will also have to accept that, wow, they also violated me.
Or even women violate men. I think a lot, when we talk about,
that's actually
that really women, we usually, when we talk about consent, we talk in terms of women. But there are women I've come across and I've worked with women who tell that, how can he say no?
It's no, I mean, there was a time.
What does it mean that?
There was a time, you know, there was a time.
I'm just going to remove my clothes. That was
actually,
actually
standard stuff. And I actually speak to men as well. Like, women actually rape men. And you find people who will share their story with you. And they'll say, I woke up and she was on top of me. And I felt some type of way.
But I just
didn't, because I didn't want her to feel this thing. But, you know, maybe some had a conversation with them after and some just chested it. But they know in their hearts that that thing affected them. You know, they know they actually felt violated.
Sometimes, like, even if they're not necessarily, like, emotionally affected like that. But it's just somebody took away your ability to say yes or no.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not okay. And sometimes even when you've said yes, right? Part of consent when you talk about fries, right?
Is enthusiastic.
No, you can take it back.
Mm-hmm.
So yes, I said yes to kissing. I said yes to you even penetrating me or me penetrating you. But now I don't want to anymore. It's reversible. I can reverse it.
Mm-hmm.
And I can stop. But then it's like, what do you mean? We're already so far. This is where I want to stop. For whatever reason, I'm not comfortable going for that. So I just don't feel like it anymore.
Yeah.
And it's okay. Why are you being such a tease? I'm not being a tease. And then, you know, it's that fear of, we're already here. Let me just.
Mm-hmm. And that's why I always say, you can stop. This thing I've argued with men, I'm like, even if you're just about to ejaculate, she's not doing the game, come out. There's no point of no return. I mean, that one, there's been a whole debate, even in the sex space. I'm like, at whatever point it is, if the other person says, I don't want it again, enough. It's not by force. You can't force somebody to.
Because really, why are you?
How do you even feel comfortable?
How do you feel good
knowing the other party was not interested?
So point of no return. You want to come, pull out and use your hand now.
Exactly. Continue with your hand. It's not that hard.
After all, women.
I mean,
men will come.
Then they continue.
Roll over, and leave the woman to her own devices. Or like I tell men, when you come, and she hasn't come, God give you 10 fingers.
Give you mouth. Give you tongue.
So many tools that you can use to also help her come. If she wants to. But it's actually quite crazy.
I mean, honestly, we can go on and on and on when it comes to this topic. But I did ask you, spit or swallow?
Swallow.
Okay, thank you so much for coming on. Sex tip of the week.
Ooh.
Yes. What do you want to tell? What do you want to tell your fans, your listeners? What do you call your Olori Coitus cruise?
You know what's so interesting? I've been off the socials for a while. So I just came back to Instagram this past weekend and I had a live, my first live in months. And so I was asking, I was like, what do we even call ourselves? What do we call our lives? You know? And somebody said, we'll call it the Olori Coitus. We'll call it Town Hall Meeting. So now my lives will be called Town Hall Meeting. Because I was like, you guys are like my people, my village people. But you know, Nigerians don't like the term village people. Because when you say village people, your village people are local. Razzle. When they say your village people after you,
your enemies.
So then but you know, as Olori now,
your tribe,
as queen, my tribe, my community people, my townspeople. So I don't know what I call them. Coitusers. I'm not sure how palatable that is for the general public. But sex tip of the week.
Mm-hmm.
Use lube. Use lube.
Don't use
Spitz. Don't be shy about using lube. We're on the Spitz or Swallow podcast. Please don't use Spitz. Spitz is not enough. It will dry. Buy the lube. Use the lube.
Mama lube is expensive now.
Yes, but guess what you can use? Guess what you can use? Coconut oil.
Yeah, I heard.
Food grade coconut oil. No, I didn't say oil. Yeah, coconut oil can be good, but just don't use oil and condom. And especially latex condoms. Latex and oil. The condom will bust.
Don't put coconut oil in my own vagina. I said, don't put coconut oil.
Why? Are you allergic?
Yeah, I'm quite sensitive. So there are certain things that, you know.
But do you eat coconut oil? You don't. Okay. So if you don't, then if you cannot, you know, ingest it, then don't put it.
And I feel like, honestly, I feel like sometimes the way the vagina is, depending on what your flora is saying, anything can throw it off.
Sometimes
so you try it and it's
which cool is why, for the most part, I always say this. People always say, oh, why something natural. So I always say coconut oil. But I always say that, honestly, like, buy the ones that are made in factories. And I say that just because...
Yeah, because those ones have more allergen tests. They have standardized and all of that stuff.
There's one that I've discovered made in Nigeria. Mm. It's from Clean Peach Co. It's called Peach Nectar.
Mm.
It's Odagon.
Mm.
It's very cute. Shout out to Precious.
I'm going to test it.
Of Clean Peach Co. Yeah.
If it happens to my bum, I'm coming for you.
Do you know the reason I'm saying you could try it? It's because I'm also super sensitive and I haven't had any. I definitely don't use most water-based. 99% of water-based lubricants, I don't, because glycerin. Mm. And I'm sensitive to the glycerin. Yeah. It, like, feels like it's burning. So I don't... I typically would use, like, a silicone-based lube or oil-based lube. Okay. So, yeah, try it out.
All right.
And see. And then we also have the ones that are infused with other things.
One or two things. Yeah. The tingles or the...
No, not those kind of tingles.
The ones that make you...
CBD.
Yeah, CBD. CBD, that's what I was going to say.
Yeah. Make you be like...
I was going to say that people say it promotes blood flow to that area.
Have you tried it?
I haven't. So I know people that swear by it. I've had one in my from one of these popular brands in my wish list for a long time, but I always keep forgetting.
Okay, so I feel like I know that brand that you bought. Is it an American brand?
Yes.
I bought it. Isn't that it's not good?
But it's not matching the reviews that you're seeing.
The reviews were so amazing. It didn't work for me. They said 20 minutes before I was waiting.
Somebody said for the men that should just drop it, put a drop on his cap.
I also read that men shouldn't use it because...
It's because numbness or what?
Premature.
Oh yeah, because it's too sensitive.
Yeah, but like for women, so like the receiving partner should put it on and then he will get the lube sensation. It didn't really work for me, that one, but I have been told to try to do it by yourself. With like food grade coconut oil and then
we'll get to the lab and cook.
I was like, you know, lab. I'll let you know. I'll try it out and let you know.
Let me know how it goes.
But lube, man, lube is everything. Lube makes reduces pain, increases pleasure. People think it's only for, but I'm so wet. But your wetness, usually, I mean, if you're going, you know, round after round, you will start getting dry because, your wetness is mostly water.
Mm-hmm.
And this would prevent soreness.
Not to mention the AC can affect it. Not to mention the time in your cycle.
AC make things dry. Yeah, time in your cycle, hormones, everything. Sometimes you're just dehydrated.
Have you ever tried to have sex with a fan facing your bum bum? No.
But think about it. What is fan doing now? It's air now. It's just making
it's drying. That's why I'm just like when there's no light, you know, I was like, okay, let me use the recharging before. I had to abort mission. It's not for me. No AC, no bueno. Thank you.
No AC.
If there's no AC, no
bueno. Oh, right. I think you're like, no AC. I'm
no,
like,
if there's no AC, I can't too. I can't. I don't like sweaty. It's not that deep.
You know, but see, now that's the thing. When you read all those memes, I would just say sweaty.
The sweatiness. No, that one, there was winter outside. It was not the one that...
I beg.
Somebody's sweat was entering your eyeballs.
I beg, please go and bath first. We need to be nice and clean. Don't want to be smelling sweat up and down.
Oh, my God.
If it's your deal, do it.
Yeah. I mean, to be fair, because, you know... Some Nigerians still be...
Everybody likes what they like. Yeah. So I try not to yuck anybody's yum. But if you're asking me yesterday, not only Rico, it's also yesterday, about, I tell you my own thoughts. Yeah, no, you know, you I'm, generally will tell people like, look, I'm teaching you all these ones. Pick the one that, that works for best you. For you.
But for me, don't sweat on my eye, please. So yeah, well, tell us where we can find you on socials, how people can reach you, you know.
You can find me on all socials. So Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, TikTok. I'm trying to, trying this TikTok thing, Sha.
Generational gap, I mean.
But there are older people. I'm not that old. I've been seeing like 60 plus people, grandparents on TikTok.
Even me, my TikTok presence is weak. I like Instagram. Like, I feel like getting used to using like a new app, and then right now, so TikTok is also favoring long videos. They want you to come and be doing story time of 10 minutes and so short form. They're trying to move away from short form.
Interesting, but I am at Olori Koitos on all socials. So Olori, O-L-O-R-I. And then Koitos is C-O-I-T-U-S.
So fellow Koitosers.
Oh, God. Lima, you know where to find now. Her. My people are not going to be crazy about this Koitosers. What do we call the Koitoser?
I mean, Koitoser. You know you're Koitoser. Koitosa, I'm proud.
Okay.
Where can you find me? At House of Chocolates. Find the podcast at Spit or Swallow Pod. SOS Pod Official on Twitter. Spit or Swallow Pod on, what was the last one? On YouTube. And then, find us on YouTube. Subscribe. Share. Don't be watching. Yes, we did, because I went on Instagram and I held their neck. I said, "You people, if I sleep, I'll wake up. I want to see 1,000 subscribers." But that's the thing about sex content. You people will watch, they will share, they will hide.
How's it doing on YouTube? Because I've considered YouTube, but again, another platform.
I mean, it's coming up. I've noticed it's definitely guest dependent and stuff. Like I said, the most watched episode, I think that's on like 12K now, is the one with that, where I had the porn star and all. So people definitely, you know, they pick and choose based on what you're talking about. But yeah, it's moving. And YouTube, so far, they don't seem to be holding our neck.
Maybe that's a place you can put,
and then there you can also regulate the kind of content that you want to put out there and stuff. So yes, thank you. Thank you. See you guys same time next week. Bye.